Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
We'll push the button and we'll see where this goes. So
it does say recording, so we're good.
Back with me once again is Attack of the Bee Movies, Johnny Podogi.
Hey man, thanks for having me back.
Anytime. So did a Scooby-Doo episode. We've been doing plenty of other stuff. This is the year for reviewing franchises, and I just, you know, there's universally beloved or recognized cartoons, and it's like, you know, Warner Brothers animation department, that's definitely one of the key factors if you're not going to talk Disney or Hanna-Barbera. So
or DreamWorks.
Right, DreamWorks, Pixar, anything. And yeah. For hand-drawn animation, you know, I was constantly just renting the same Roadrunner and Coyote and Bugs, and especially I had this one Sylvester and Tweety just cartoons compilation VHS that was like from '90s to early 2000s, and that was a lot of fun.
Well, it's funny because they're like anthology movies, right? Like they're like a cartoon version of like the Twilight Zone, because each one's a standalone story. Six of them in each movie,
and it definitely is one of many that kind of prepared everyone for just different segments and unrelated, uncorresponding ones. So whenever I saw a movie that didn't really correspond, I was less, for lack of a better word, annoyed. I was like, I'm so used to seeing just various tales that are all connected to one key thing. And yeah, these ones were just VHS tapes that they, you know, mastered five different ones, and that's the whole tape, you know.
Yeah, I bought some Laserdisc ones off eBay that were like that. It's like, here's six cartoons, but it has a name, right? Like Bugs Bunny Superstar.
Yeah,
the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie. Like, so you're expecting like a buddy picture, but it's not that. But it's still enjoyable.
It's probably got way better quality than any other remaster if it's a Laserdisc.
A little outdated now, but it's okay. Cool. They're cheap. They're a couple bucks, so you know. But yeah, you know.
I'm sure. Yeah. So, I'm gonna just number these 10 for one and. Just whatever sticks. If you want to name one, I'm cool. If you want me to name one and you comment, I can do that too.
We could go back and forth. I got a couple.
If you can't, since there's less movies, I mean, we can also name shows, ones that were either original or cartoon block or half and
right,
half.
Right, because they have them divided between like box office, right, direct to video, theatrical releases. Sorry, that's box office.
All good.
And then the compilation ones, which were basically like, you always want to say it's like season one, season two, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
Like, and then I mean, they also had plenty of cameo roles, but we're not going to worry about that.
The confusion was also because they would just retitle them because they either changed networks or hours.
Right.
And I wanted to keep it fresh and new because of management. You know how these networks are, so.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, I would go with... if we're going to start 10 to 1, one's obviously the best one. So I would go with number 10. I would put Daffy Duck's Fantastic Island.
Fair enough. I watched that one quite a lot. I didn't like as much as the other ones, but there's definitely some winners in there.
Hence number 10. Fair enough. Yeah, it wasn't horrible. It had a lot of good ones, like you said, but it wasn't as long as some of the other compilations either.
That's true too. The other ones do, and you know, I was watching this on Cartoon Network's Cartoon Theater, so they, I thought the it would never end. You know, a 1-2 hour movie almost, you know, becomes what feels like 2.5. You know, it's technically more like 70 minutes because, you know, they wanted to get people in and out fast, and the shorts weren't that fast. They're each like 5 to 10 minutes, but it's like, plus, you know, then you had the 20 minutes extra of original stuff that makes the. Yeah.
So that laughing in the background is my very own Tasmanian devil who decided to bust down the stairs. she literally is like Taz or Animal from Muppet Babies.
Oh, there you go.
Or from the Muppets. But what was nice about the Fantastic Island one was that it had some classic ones, and it had sequences of animation between where he was dressed, where I want to say it was Daffy and Speedy were very much like Ricardo Montalban and the guy that always said the plane. It's like there was like something tying them in, you know?
Yeah. So Tebow or whoever, he was played by Tweety, I think.
Tattoo was Speedy, yeah, you're right. What'd I say? Yeah, Speedy Gonzales.
Right. So he was kind of a combo of the two, and yeah, but Daffy's he's inherited the island under his pretentious reason, and it's just an excuse for him to just be his usual spoiled self. I think I like the premise more than I like the delivery, but it's worth a watch. It's definitely worth a watch, you know, just because there's some winners in there, some classic Fritz Freleng. And
yeah, I mean, you had some Peppa. It was a nice mix, right? You had Sylvester, you had
that's true.
Bugs is in it.
Bugs is in it, but he's not even in, you know, half the stuff, I think, from what I recall.
It's like one or two. And then Pirate Sam, Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah. I think Granny shows up at one point. So
it's Granny's just, in it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just.
Porky's in it.
Oh, he's got to be in it. Yeah. He's in the opening titles, and I think he narrates a section. So yeah, it's interesting. It's worth a watch.
Yeah. I mean, the standouts, Captain Hairblower. I mean, it's Pirate Sam versus Bugs. Come on, how can you get away from that?
Right.
Louvre, Come Back to Me, Pepe Le Pew, you know. Because they were basically, Daffy's Island was granting their wishes. That was the cutscene, right? Just like in Fantasy Island. And I'd go of Rice and Hen, which was with Chrissy and
Foghorn Leghorn. It's all good.
Yeah. So I think those three or four are the ones to go with on that one. It's definitely worth a watch.
I definitely think this one plays better. It might be number two or three out of all the original movies that were released.
Really? Okay. It's hard for me because there's, you know, when we're doing a top 10 list, right? So
when you're ranking any show, it's going to be hard anyway, just because nostalgia plays into it. And it's like, well, this one might not be the better one, but I enjoy it more.
yeah, that's true.
So it gets even more complex. And I'm going to go with number 9, Tiny Toons Adventures.
Excellent choice.
I haven't watched this since I was like really young, like 8, 9, maybe 10, but I remember watching this a lot at one of my cousin's house in Austin after Winnie the Pooh, and yeah, I never had an issue with it. I haven't seen it ever since, but you know, the memories can retain there just because, you know, compared to what came after with Baby Looney Tunes and everything, you like those, that's fine. You don't like it, that's fine. This one, to me, just having Spielberg's Amblin be the main retcon behind it, and just made Saturday mornings just so much more fun. Just, you know, if I wasn't watching the WB, I was watching Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon.
I just wish Warner Brothers would have had the ideas for some of these ideas, like some of these ideas before Disney. Because you had Muppet Babies and then, hey, Tiny Toons. It's like, Tiny Toons was just as good, if not better. Why couldn't you do it first?
There's that, and I don't know, man. For lack of a better word, they really could have – they had all these ideas, but they were so much like all the companies, they were just so spoiled and with embracing everything, home video circuits and everything, that they were just always late to each party, and they were just always bombing and just realizing, hey, we can make our money back when it, you know, bombs and goes straight to HBO.
Yeah.
And, you know, this
is video. I mean, they'll sell tons of them on video.
Home video. And yeah, I mean, even stores are starting to have it. Everyone's embracing different music and other just alternatives and GeoCities. God, I love, you know, just fan sites and everything. And
GeoCities. Wow.
Yeah. Promotion. And even if no one's seen something, they've heard of it just through other parts of the interweb, so to speak. And yeah, this one just was made with love. I probably wouldn't laugh at it now, but I mean, there are some kickers in there. Two of my friends were just flat out just raised on it. And it's just their absolute favorite cartoon show to date. And they're making fun of this one. I think that one skunk that's kind of part of Pepe's family or next of kin. And they're at a concert and they're like, what concert did you go to? Yes. No, really, what concert did you go to? It's like, and they're having to explain that to me. I'm like, no, I know who Yes is. That's my first concert from back in 06. Don't tell me what I know what that means. But yeah, other people aren't going to get that what that means, but it's funny.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that one.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
Oh, hell, I'll
cheat. iTunes is good.
Huh. I'll go into number 8. Basically, Animaniacs. I just...
Ooh, now see, I was going to put them higher.
Okay. Well,
because the Animaniacs gave us Pinky and the Brain.
That's true. I kind of did rank that higher. I'm kind of cheating. But
right, because Pinky and the Brain is part of Animaniacs, right? And then it spun off, didn't it? Or was it always its own? No, it was part of Animaniacs, I thought, wasn't it?
It was both. It started out in there and they had their own. But I always kind of equated the two because I just, you know, I just all the segments just kind of intertwined. You know, I was just so used to it. So, I mean...
Yeah, the Song of the Nations, that was it Yakko sings?
Oh, God.
It's brilliant. I mean, just the writing in Animaniacs and the concept was brilliant, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, as a kid, you're like, what's that giant thing with the Warner Brothers sign on it? It's a water tower. Who puts water in towers? And then they live there instead, you know?
Yeah, that...
Very Hobgoblins.
They probably were inspired by it.
Oh, but yeah, Animaniacs, man, that touches my heart, Cam, I tell you, because I spent a lot of time watching that and Pinky and the Brain.
Very much so, and I mean, these are one of the many cartoons where you see them just kind of embrace the real world and blend it with the real life, and I think that's why, and we'll get on to the other ones, that they all, this was just the first cartoon I'm watching where it's like you're seeing them actually come out and talk to the viewer, or...
Mm-hmm. They break the third wall.
Exactly. Or
fourth wall, rather.
So everyone's like, oh, Deadpool. I'm like, yeah, but I've been seeing that for years before I even knew what it was called, breaking the fourth wall. So
do you know do you know Dot's whole name? Remember whenever she'd say it, it was like something Conchetta, like
and it was like it's my kind of humor. It's a total jerk asshole thing where other people are gonna be like, hey, and other people are gonna be like, you know, just try and remember it, try and rewind the tape and
yep.
name it all. And I mean, but so I mean, I didn't watch so much as the show. I think they did reduce it to just shorter episodes for reruns by at least early 2000s, definitely 2000 2001 02.
Well, I mean, the latest they eventually cut certain episodes completely because of, you know, issues with cultural issues with cultural depictions, you know.
There was that, and I mean,
they so some of them you don't see much anymore. I mean, like, you don't see a lot of Pepe Le Pew stuff. You don't see a lot of which, in retrospect, wow. And you don't see too much Speedy Gonzalez, although I don't know too many people of that culture that were actually like, I don't know too many people of that culture that were like upset with Speedy Gonzalez, because they're all like, because he had the uncles and cousins that would always lay there, and all the people I know of that culture, and I know a decent amount, we're all like, yeah, I got uncles like that.
There's that. They found it relatable as also, well, they're like, I made a bigoted joke like that. So I think it is just kind of one of those where it's just like that they were mainly just cutting just ones that were just very excessive, like just had just even before just the blackface stuff, they were just cutting just stuff that is like, yeah, someone might take that the wrong way or that might be a little too risque. So.
Well, I think what people forget, and you know, early cartoons weren't for kids, right? Like cartoons like Betty Boop and all that, and even up through the beginning, well, because they were at the beginning of movies, right? There were shorts, and
who went to see the movies? Yeah, it was adults. They didn't have ratings. It just wasn't a thing. It's like, right. You want to bring them, you can bring them. But otherwise, yeah. But otherwise, we're going to say you might not want to bring them. So I can see where along the way.
I always thought Looney Tunes was a little more adult humor orientated, especially with the amount of shotguns and Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner trick.
Oh, stuff. Yeah. It's in,
compared to, like, say, Disney movie. Or Jetsons or any of that.
Yeah, it's just awesome. And
oh, agreed. I love it. But and yeah.
It kind of just reinvigorates the off-color, just silly, just lowbrow, just childish nature that everyone embraces. It's like, yeah, gotta love it. And more or less, I mean, I think it's just good to just kind of have that kind of feel, just that kind of escapism. Just say, you know, people are going to get hurt, but it's all good. It's not real. And yeah, I still see people, you know, it just always lasted more as opposed to just whatever, you know, skit show you would watch, and some of the stuff would be a little too off-putting or just too much. And
like, my daughter watches like the Three Stooges or Looney Tunes. I'm like, hey, don't try that. Don't try that here. She goes, duh. I'm like, well, for an 8-year-old, you're pretty damn smart. Because I guarantee you, I would have tried painting a hallway on a wall to see if somebody would have walked into it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's the same thing with certain movies you can watch on TV, and others is like, yeah, there's a reason they're shown at a later time. It's a little too heavy in certain areas or gritty. And some movies you can edit, and some are going to be too intense despite being heavily edited. Sure. And some just only get it just because, you know, the ratings, but the violence isn't any different than an X-Files episode. And that's the other thing too. I would get into discussions. Everyone's like, yeah, they would never show that on TV. I'm like, yeah, they would. They would show that totally on Criminal Minds or 24.
I always like the people that are more on the religious side, and they're always like, oh, you know,
they said, God,
how
damn.
are you letting your kids watch Looney Tunes? It's so violent. I'm like, have you read the Bible? Just throwing it out there. It's
a lot of violence. And which version?
There's a lot of violence in some parts of that book.
Yeah, and there's adultery.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with them watching Looney Tunes.
I know. Everyone's got to villainize Tiny something Toon. Just to give a reason for why you shouldn't watch it. And
yeah, I know.
And my dad would always be like, you can watch James Bond, just don't watch it with your mother in the room.
So I told my daughter, I'm like, you want to watch James Bond this time?
He knew I was better, and I was... had never shown any sides of just deviant or off-putting behavior. So, you know, he didn't...
Oh, that's why you're letting it all out now, huh?
Well, no. It's just one of
kept
those...
Kept it all bottled up till the podcasting started.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, well played. But, yeah, it's just one of those is like, you just trust certain people to not do stupid shit. So now it's just a matter of like, okay, so the math humor, I'm not going to get because I fucking suck at math and I'm just not wired that way. But, yeah, there's other ones where it's like, okay, yeah, you got to be a fucking idiot. If you don't get
all of us know opera because of Bugs Bunny,
right? It's there's Sesame Street, and then there's Looney Tunes, and I'll make a confession. I did do art growing up, and I would do, you know,
I think all of us did.
Yeah, and then I just didn't know what I wanted to do with it, so it was kind of a skill I kind of lost. I mean, don't get me wrong, I can still do storyboards and everything. I need that mentality. I need it, but I'm not as 100% as where I was back, you know, 2 decades ago almost. So yeah,
oh, you really peaked when you were 10, huh?
Well, even more so before that, 7s and 8. You know, I still had even particular coloring books I kept around. I just wanted, my sister's kind of found that to be her hobby and later in life. So it's just pleasant, just drawing and characterizing people, and just shows you how much you want to go. But yeah, after doing various art classes and painting, I'm like, yeah. Now I remember why I gave this up. It wasn't necessarily that it wasn't making any money.
You liked it as a hobby, not as a career.
It was a hobby, and I was just like, I don't know how to make this a career. I don't think it will be a good career because of just how many people just do all the art shows. And you know, and I don't know, just for whatever reason, film just clicked with me more because the minute I started in the mid-2000s where people started making their own movies and funding it, that was an inspiration. And then when I saw that it was actually more feasible and not a, you know, less than 50% chance, I was like, you know, I'll bite. Mm-hmm. I've always thought about it. I've always given it up because I found out, oh, it's not all fun. But now I'm getting too distracted by how stuck up these professors are. And I'm not seeing the bright choice that this really is a fun escapade. And this is me. This is a passion, and it can be done well because it's clicking. It's, mm-hmm. I'm getting it now. I've been through the ringer. I've embarrassed myself. Now I know, okay, now I like the challenge. Now is like, okay, this 6 months better be worth it. You better have something in that fucking can that you can show. And I think animators were much the same way. They're looking at it, and before it's even, you know, put on the projector, they had to instantly review saying, yep, that's a lot of ink we wasted. Yeah. You know, can't use that. And so,
and it takes forever back. It took forever back in the day to do an animated film because it was all hand drawn, each cell.
Right.
It wasn't like now, you know, where you draw a couple and you can fill
it in. Has to be this X amount of frames, and yeah. I can under. And some people have been complaining about some of the DVD transfers still have some white grizzle on it. I'm like, you know, it's an older movie.
Let it have it. It gives it its character
to me. It makes it more appeal more to me. I'm more annoyed when it's not that old a movie, and you know. Someone fucked up, clearly, you know.
Did we leave off on number 8?
Number 8 was...
Animaniacs, right?
Yes, yeah. Daffy Duck, Tiny Toons, Animaniacs. So, number 7, what do you want that to be?
I'm going to... You know, this is going to be an odd choice. I'm going to go with new Looney Tunes.
Okay.
It was from the last, I want to say, 3-4 years?
It's on HBO Max now.
Yeah, I didn't even know they made anything newer recently. I don't know.
It really did come out of stage, right?
My wife and kids are Disney fans, and I mean, they like other stuff too. Don't get me wrong. They love Scooby-Doo, mm-hmm. which is Warner, you know? And so do I, but I started watching it a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, well, you know, this is pretty good, but I tell you something, Daffy's way more unstable. Like Daffy is unhinged in a lot of these, like, wow. There's one where they think he flies into a satellite and crashes into it, and he lands in Area 51, and they think he's an alien. So they want his alien secrets, and it's just ridiculous. Yeah, he makes demands, and he wants a hot tub full of mac and cheese. But just the way he's acting, I'm like, wow, he's acting very Joker-esque. I loved it.
I thought it was arsonist.
Yeah. So I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was very much in line with what you would expect from Looney Tunes.
Right.
You know?
That's a good point. There were
things thrown in, like making lefts at Albuquerque, or, you know, this means war, stuff like that, you know, or at least references to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I enjoyed it.
It seems like it is more old school than the other ones, which were just, I don't know. Yeah, just too quick to rush them out instead of just kind of make sure the humor was there.
It was like, we need to put something out so people don't forget.
You're right.
Let's do it. And then, yeah.
Stay relevant.
Yeah. So that's my number. That's number 7 for me. And this time I'm stealing from you because you were, I'm doing number 6, Daffy Duck's Quack Busters. Mostly Daffy Duck episodes, but you had classics like Transylvania 6-5000, you had Night of the Living Duck, Hide and Go Tweet, and I think Jumpin' Jupiter had some clips on there too. That was one of the weird ones because it had like 5 or 6 actual episodes, but then there were like 4 clips of other episodes, which was kind of different.
Yeah, I like that one for me. I love the premise. I like some of the stuff actually featured, but for whatever reason, 2 different times I was watching it, it just was always a rough sit for me, which was weird because I would always come in like the third part of the movie, and I was really digging some of the other detective stuff that was featured, but I don't know. I could give it another rewatch. I could watch it again probably just because it's interesting how this was coming in like towards the beginning of the 80s, and they were just...
And they had episodes from the 40s, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. 80s. The Duxorcist, that was a good one.
Yeah, that's kind of the one that everyone remembers. It's just one of those, just like, wow, okay. No issue with it overall. It's just kind of not just totally hitting the mustard, but it serves its purpose. I can respect that one. It did its job, so to speak. So I'll go with number 5, Back in Action.
Back in Action was better than I thought. Not as good as I'd hoped, but much better than I thought it would be. Like lofty hopes, right? And then I'm like, you know what? I was satisfied with it. I thought it was good. It was enjoyable.
I saw it in the theater, and I
You know, it was better than the last couple of Muppet movies.
Exactly, man. Oh, we're definitely going
to
do
that's the one thing that for some reason they can't seem to nail the Muppets right anymore. I take that back. They can in short form.
Did you see their new TV show where they kind of filmed it like the mockumentaries? I kind of
hilarious.
It was a total tribute to Muppets Tonight in kind of a strange way, similar premise than behind the scenes at a studio. And it's like that's what they should do.
Because that's what I mean.
The original show was.
Yeah, like, that's what they're good is like little 5-minute segments.
And
when Disney, they try wrapping in an hour and a half long movie around it.
Yeah, I'm glad Disney let that license expire because I'm just like, yeah, I do not want to see more of these bad movies because it's just everything that it's not supposed to be.
I don't think Disney put out a Muppet movie.
Yeah,
I thought the movies were done before Disney bought
them. Well, I'm talking to the more recent ones, like the last two movies they made. With Jason Segel and Amy Adams, those were under their banner. And so, yeah.
But they seem to handle the TV stuff well enough, like the short form, like you said, the one that's out now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty good. And the Swedish Chef is, I loved watching the Swedish Chef face off against Danny Trejo.
Exactly. And the celebrity cameos were actually well-timed. And in those, it's like you would see him appear and it's like, they were paid $1 million to do nothing for 6 seconds. That's just fucking stupid. Come on, you know? And it doesn't matter. Yeah. Well, and when you're having to explain to, you know, kids or, you know, friends, is like, what did that represent? You know, when Family Guy does it, it's kind of funny because it's just the kind of perfect randomness. And there is just like, I really don't know what that had to do with anything. And it's not even if I don't get it, it's just not funny. And, you know, it's not a Space Ghost kind of thing where it's like, I'm not sure who this celebrity is, but it's hysterical seeing them react to this cartoon. And
that's how the new one is when Kermit interviews people.
Absolutely.
It's much more like that. So I know we're supposed to be on Looney Tunes, but I will say the new Muppet Babies is enjoyable. Like I have kids and they like it and it's not bad either. And they'll throw Muppets in occasionally that
growing up when I was a wee one, but I'll take your word for it. I'll give it a go.
So number five, what was the one
you put down? That was Back in Action. Yeah.
Back in Action. Okay.
Did you see this in the theater or you saw it? You're part of the Netflix.
I saw it on video. Yeah, I saw it. I saw it on video. I'm 10 years older than you.
I know. I didn't know if you
I'm saw part of it. The Netflix having to rent DVDs, copy them and send them back generation.
Oh, that's fine. I know my father never saw this, but you know, I saw it with my uncle and my mother, and my uncle bought the DVD and we watched it endless times. No, I'll take that back, just free times. But and then after a while, I kind of just stopped watching it because my sister wanted to watch it every other day. I'm like, now you're making it on fun. When you watch something too much, it's not fun anymore. You know, and so I'm one of those guys. I like to watch it like maybe once a week, once a month. You know, endless amounts of time.
But it's not bad. It was nice seeing Brendan Fraser too. I like Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, and we've talked endlessly, coincidentally on other episodes, how Joe Dante did not like working on this. But, you know, it's not one of those where you can tell, you know, he was so hampered, you know, that nothing good came out. You know, that there's not much suckage. Now, obviously, compared to some of the other ones, which were trying to just too quickly just sign up the first radio hit band, they picked a lot of surprising indie music, and everybody show your moves. I forget the name of that band. They were the featured end credits song, that band that did that song. And
yeah, it was kind of cool that they were trying to like,
and they didn't do much of anything after like 07, 08. And I'm like, okay, but it doesn't feel dated. That's the weird part. And everyone else is just like, they would just jump on the first thing that hit them. You know what? I'll go with number four.
Go ahead.
Animaniacs, Wacko's Wish. That I've seen this more than I've seen the actual show. I just saw it a lot. It was even heavily promoted on every Warner Bros. Home video ad. And I just have to say, just for a Christmas themed thing, this isn't cringeworthy. I mean,
so many times Christmas things are just done like bad.
Exactly. I mean,
this was actually very pleasant.
It doesn't copy the, you know, it doesn't really even copy the Christmas Carol for the fifth time or, you know, It's a Wonderful Life. It just goes straight into, you know, he's got these wishes and he has to learn how to use them. I'm like, that's fine. That's okay. Because everyone else, Disney and everyone else, again, they just had to have, you know, Scrooge McDuck or something. I'm like, no, let's just, please, just stick with an original storyline. And I mean, they're singing, but it's not cringing. And that's so weird, because that was back when I just couldn't stand certain singing segments of something, mm-hmm. you know, unless it was Disney for whatever reason. I don't know why.
I give them credit. When it comes to musical numbers, they do a fantastic job.
Well, and then they're
kind of... they have a history of it, right? Like all the way back before Mary Poppins, even.
Oh, absolutely. And they're interjection comedic segments, so it's working. And, you know, much like Tenacious D is both a comedy mm-hmm. and a metal band, you know, it's just with this, you know, it just, it really is just, you're seeing the love on screen. And even though it's fucking wacko, you know, the third of the trio.
The third of the Marx Brothers.
Yeah. And all of them get lots to do. And I think that's what's cool, you know, it's just, and I always liked how everyone was drawn, how, you know, there's like some new exclusive characters in this too. And it's not,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't feel last minute. And TNT so often, you know, sister channel would fall victim to this half the time. And this one, you know, it really is well ironed. You know, I think it premiered on home video, and then it, you know, Cartoon Network played it endlessly. And sometimes at not even the most Christmas times, that was the even bigger kicker. And it's like, you know, I don't mind that. That's actually pretty cool, as opposed to seeing mm-hmm. something like Home Alone on ABC Family for the billionth time. You know, this is...
Yeah. I can never get enough of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, though. I think it's the most realistic portrayal of family Christmas. I mean, it's exaggerated, but it legitimately is. There's always that old lady that can't see or doesn't know what she can't hear.
I think Die Hard is the most realistic Christmas movie.
It's Die Hard's only a Christmas movie because it's a Christmas party. Die Hard 2 qualifies as a Christmas movie then too, because he was flying to see her on Christmas or vice versa. Yeah,
and I think even part 5, it's snowing in one segment.
isn't that just because they're in Russia and it snows there all the time?
Exactly.
Oh, no, Christmas Vacation, I think it's... because, like, if I had Christmas here, that's what would happen. And it had an all-star cast. The little old lady was actually the original voice for Betty Boop.
Yeah, and see, that was the time of Warner where it's like, regardless of whether you like the movie or not, I liked how it was just so common that you would see all these voice actors like June Foray or even like make a cameo in some of these movies. I'm like, that's awesome. Thank mm-hmm. you. This gives it a bigger timelessness, because now you can bring your grandfather who's used to stuff from the 40s and 50s to watch it, and he'll
mm-hmm. at least have all know it. Indeed. I'm gonna steal number 3 from you. And I kind of think...
Oh, snap.
I think this one should maybe be higher, but I'm going to throw it out there because this one contains so many of the great shorts there was. The Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie.
Oh, perfect. I thought it was going to be number 1, but that's fine. No, that's great.
Oh, you see, the top 3 are tough because there's 3 excellent choices. And this one is so great because this one, you have it shows Marvin the Martian, Duck Dodgers, Robin Hood, Daffy.
Absolutely, I've seen it the most times because Alibaba. It's that universal. It has something for everybody. Yosemite Sam is heavily featured.
What's Opera Doc? The opera one, you know. I mean, and then there's clips from all the other so many other great ones.
And
so it was
the first one out, and it's just the most layered. It really.
Yeah, I think there was one before it. But
yeah, my bad.
There wasn't much on it. I mean, it didn't have any of the ones I would consider like the classics, right? Like,
yeah.
What's Cook and Doc? Yeah, that one's in the first one, and that's great.
But, absolutely. And this one
is like the ultimate greatest hits of Looney Tunes.
That's exactly why it works, and it doesn't drag. They chose the most prompt ones, and the main actual new animation that for the movie also works. You know, it is just as equally well done. You literally cannot tell, and that's just something to be said, because some of the other ones is like they would just kind of just be moving awkwardly, even though they were using some of the same cells. It's just there was some, they would have mm-hmm. some new exclusive scenes, or mm-hmm. the voice tones would be different, so it's like, yeah, no, it's not gelling. And this one, I'm just as interested in, you know, both title characters, but I also just like how, like, it starts more kind of upbeat and then just goes to slapstick and then ends just kind of explosively. It's like, okay, let's close this out.
You got Fast and Furious, or Furious, rather. Right. You have To Beep or Not to Beep. Granted, it's Bugs and Roadrunner heavy, but it says it right in the title.
That's what
you're going to expect. But the fact that Duck Dodgers and Robin Hood Daffy and Duck Amuck are all in it.
Exactly.
You know, they definitely spread the love a little bit. Because those are really the top three protagonists, quote unquote, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Really so, because I mean, there'd be even times of this where I kid you not, I would see the movie because it'd be on in an afternoon or an evening after they'd already shown, you know, and coincidentally some of those same cartoons in the earlier day. It's like, no, that's fine, you know.
Yeah, I can watch it again. Yeah.
And I used to know a few people who had a few different VHS clamshells. I rented from the videos mom and I used to go to this Kroger, and there was a video rental store inside there, which had a bunch of FYE entertainment, you know.
Yeah.
But there was a video store next to it, and I think we even had a few tapes, and we got to keep them because, you know, the store went out of business. Yeah.
you're going to get – after they hear this, you're going to get a bill.
Oh, yeah. Just always fun memories and
nostalgia. Behind your mind.
Totally. And back when you couldn't tell half of the stuff, whether it was theatrical or not, it was like, you're going to rent it one way or the other. And I missed that. And nowadays you get that at the Redbox. I'm like, yeah, quarter of these definitely never went to a theater and I'm not renting them, you know, unfortunately, because the posters suck. That there just is no care put into the promo material. They're clearly taking half-assed screenshots. And it's like, no, you need to put equal effort into the advertising. In fact, most of the budget should go to the advertising. So that way people actually see it.
Yeah. The people don't seem to realize that, like, well, I take that back. B-movie companies have realized that if they copy the film, the big-name film's advertisement, they'll get people renting theirs by accident.
Yeah, exactly. But put Ouija or Blair Witch or something in the title, Exorcism, someone's going to rent that eventually, just to see if it's bad or just to see if it's good. So
I just Amazon searched for the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie, and they don't really have it. It says the Bugs Bunny that you have it where you can rent it or buy it digitally, but I want it. And it says,
did you check eBay?
I haven't gotten there yet. We're recording a podcast. Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie on VHS is $49.95.
Oh my God, it's a collector's item. So
yeah, no shit.
Let me check eBay.
100 best Warner Brothers film collection, 246. But I'm scrolling through and I'm going through all the, because I typed in Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie. And all of a sudden I see Popeye. I'm like, no. And then I'm like, at the very bottom, it. I'm like, I don't know how that falls in.
Yeah, just like YouTube.
That's really weird, Amazon.
Yeah, is there a Bugs Bunny cameo in those movies? I think not.
Oh, okay, that'd be hilarious. So, He's standing next to Pennywise in the sewer. Yeah, so I took a wrong turn at Albuquerque.
There you go.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight
as needed, and let the hosts Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pox disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Hey, I heard you like movies.
I heard you like to hustle.
I heard you like podcasts.
Well, guess what?
There's a podcast for you out there called The Home Video Hustle.
Damn right.
Every Friday, we talk about whatever movie PJ picks out the bag. What does that mean? Every Wednesday on our YouTube page, I put a bunch of movies in a bag, and PJ picks one out at random. And then we just watch it. We talk about it for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever we feel like doing, wherever the conversation leads us.
But do we actually talk about the movie?
Most of the time.
Ah.
Tangents galore.
Yes.
So believe me, we may be a movie podcast, but it's not always about movies. We may talk about video games.
Mm-hmm.
Music. Yeah, that's the big one, music. Sometimes we might get a little bit of politicalness in there.
Yes.
Sometimes we may just, we know what we like to do. We like to tell stories, PJ.
Ah, yes.
I am the master storyteller of the podcast realm. undefeated. So if you like to hear about movies, video games, whatever foolishness comes to our mind, the most random stuff you could think of, check out the Home Video Hustle. You can find us on the Stitchers.
Yes.
The Google Play.
Yes.
Apple Podcasts.
What else?
Podbean.
What else?
Podcast Addict.
Goddamn.
All that. Ain't no reason you can't get your hustle on. We everywhere. Worldwide, baby.
Hustle, motherfucker. Hustle.
Hey, we can't cuss in the promo, PJ. We gotta be family friendly. There may be podcasts out there that don't want his hair to say all that good fun stuff.
Well, you.
don't run the listeners away, PJ.
I'm sorry.
But this is going kind of long.
Yes.
So we'll end this and say, hey, check out the Home Video Hustle every Friday on all the various podcast outlets. Peace.
Peace.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And while Witch didn't make it to the top of the world, he did make the Gangs of Hollywood podcast. So join the gang and enjoy a movie review podcast about movie gangs, gangsters, mobsters, and the mayhem they cause. You can find GOH Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. At GOHpod, at www.gohpod.com, as well as your favorite podcast listening app. And remember, say hello to your little friend for me.
If you take two old punk rockers who are past their prime, put them in front of a movie screen and give them a podcast, what do you get? Cinema Punks. Cinepunks. It's the mixtape of movies.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in it.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped from watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How
did
you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Bana, 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 bana.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot holes, a gratuitous movies. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
We now continue with our program.
Okay, so eBay, if you want the classic 98 VHS clamshell, which I saw promoted nonstop, you can get that for, you know, $8 to $9.
How
or
much?
You can go $8 to $9 on eBay. Or,
oh, that's not bad.
Or you can, that would definitely be my preferred method just because I'd want to see the previews and, you know, just see it the way it was technically mostly seen for most. Or you can do the $3, you know, original VHS print, which I'm surprised. I think that'd be higher because that's not going to be at any rental store. I saw this maybe at one rental store when they, and it was like the backup copy or something.
Do you remember when VHSs would first come out, they wanted $70 a tape? And they're like, oh, it's a rental store, so it holds up better. I'm like, I don't
exactly. think that's true. It was a conflict of interest. They didn't want you to have it on, you know, and even just ordering it through the catalogs, which is
with clamshell, $40.
Yeah. And God, memories, baby. So I'm going to go with number two.
We're still recording, aren't we?
That's all good. Sylvester and Tweety Mysteries.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't expect that.
Because I think it was, I tried watching it a bunch and I wasn't Sylvester able to.
I always had issues when...
Because when it come on after Animaniacs on the WB, and that's where it really puzzled me, because most of the sites where you could find info on it didn't have info on it. They only had info on the classics, you know, up till the 80s. Yeah. And so that's where it confused me. I'm like, are any of these classic guys involved? And it's like, no, it's clear they're not involved. But June Foray is still doing the voice of, you know, Tweety and Granny. So it was cool, you know. And I always just, I would watch Tom and Jerry, but I always just resonated with Sylvester and Tweety. Like, I guess.
Did you know Tom and Jerry when they became friends? Like, I liked it when they were frenemies.
You know.
Because, like, Tom never like, it never really seemed like he really wanted to kill him. But he would get near there. But it was more, but when they became, like, buddies, it was kind of like, eh.
My issue, I guess, with Tom and Jerry is Tom just half the time was just an idiot. So I felt sorry for when, you know, he got beat up.
Especially when it was something he didn't really do. But there were lots of times Jerry would set him up for something just because.
And then it's like.
Like when he was wearing a zoot suit trying to get the girl.
Yeah, he was being all Pepe Le Pew at the time, but then he'd, to make it even more complicated, then it got even more complex how he would sometimes talk or everyone else would talk, but he wouldn't talk. I'm like, I'm confused. So, like Pink Panther, that it was hit and miss for me, but it was good. Hanna-Barbera, I definitely watched it the most, even definitely more than whatever Yogi Bear special or, you know, Scooby-Doo and Flintstones, but Flintstones and Scooby-Doo are definitely my top, but this one...
Oh, I can get the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie on Laserdisc for $100.
Get it.
You have my email address. Send me $100.
And now you got to find your Laserdisc player again.
It's sitting right here. It's hooked up.
Oh, okay, perfect.
I have a whole EV room, man. I don't have the VHS hooked up yet because it's at the other house.
But. There you go. So Sylvester and Tweety, that came on... after, you know, just reruns of other shows that the WB would show, but
they would definitely watching them work together.
That's why I liked it, and I always just liked Sylvester and Tweety because both of them were talking, and Sylvester, you know, I'm more connected to him because he's talking and sometimes talking to the viewer, and I just knew that he had the smart, maybe not the smarts, but the charisma of Bugs Bunny, and he was like the coyote where I'm fine with him getting blown the fuck up, you know? And,
speaking of bumbling the coyote.
Okay. So according to Wikipedia, I definitely recall it around 01.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
And then the final episode aired on Cartoon Network. So yeah, there you go. It was being syndicated and it was already past me. I wanted a little more mature stuff. So I stopped watching it when it's syndicating from until at least 04. Maybe 06 on rare occasions, but more likely on Boomerang. So the first season was released. They didn't release the other four seasons. But so this apparently started back in 95. So that explains it, why it had a lot of more typical animation. For whatever reason.
I remember it from the late 90s. So when you said 2001, I was kind of like, well, I think that was a little earlier. But
yeah, that's just it. I got into it more like, from at least 98.
Interesting side note, because Frank Welker did a lot of the voices, and he's who does Freddy in Scooby-Doo.
Exactly. And Scooby-Doo. Yeah, we're talking Transformers. Just the Predator. So there you go. And just every other alien voice. So yeah, he's a badass. And then that's cool. I did not expect him to do the voice, but it just showed me how this, if it wasn't Bugs and, you know, Daffy and Coyote and Roadrunner, or even Taz, you know, these guys definitely were the most resonating because they're kind of a family, you know, they're trying to kill each other and yet if you think about it, they're kind of a brother and sister.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so it's just, yeah, always a fun time, cool opening credit. And so, yeah, that makes sense. So I definitely recall it 98, 99. And then
the final episode didn't air to 2002. So the final episode contained the segments "The Tall End" and "This Is the End." Never aired on Kids WB, remained unaired until 2002 when the show aired in reruns on Cartoon Network.
There you go.
And that's interesting. I wonder why.
They did have it on at a crappy time, and I think it's just because by 6 or 7, you got to go to school. So, yeah, I was definitely always trying to just watch
this. 5 seasons and 52 episodes, though. That's pretty good. Although, yeah. Although season 2 had 8 episodes and 5 had 5, so. But it was like 13-8, 13-13-5, so it's kind of like.
It's definitely one that is underappreciated, and so that's why I rank it higher. But more or less, I don't know why it hasn't gotten future releases. Because I think it did pretty good in the ratings on Cartoon Network, so it went on longer than I expected, and at the same time, it went on earlier. So yeah, if it's starting in 95, so damn, that's half the
90s. But to be fair, like it says,
racing cable,
it says like season 5, September 18th, originally aired September 18th, 1999, and last aired. Oh, that's the syndication number, right? No, that would be, yeah, 18. So, it like, some of them span, like, more than a year, it seemed like.
So, yeah, they...
In a weird way.
They had it on. They didn't have a high emphasis or interest in it, but which is surprising because of how many years it was. You'd think you'd want to make some money back one way or the other. People would pay out the ass for something like this. Just
I mean, this is when they were definitely trying to not have bugs and everything. They were trying to really, you know.
Yeah,
because Porky wasn't in it, Wile E wasn't in it, Roadrunner wasn't in it, Bugs wasn't really in it. Out of all
the bad decisions that Warner
Brothers made. Daffy was in it, though.
Exactly. Warner Brothers is trying to embrace all these other things, and unlike other franchises, they're not trying to rely on just one actor or one mm-hmm. character to sell or justify the whole franchise. So, yeah, Batman.
Which I love Batman, but.
Well, Marvel's the same way, kind of, for a while. I only knew him from Spider-Man, or even Iron Man and Hulk cartoons. So there you go. And so with this, yeah.
Cartoon-wise, yeah, Spider-Man.
I was going to be close to them one way or the other, because as much as I watched all the other stuff, you know, and I watched classic Marvin the Martian and, you know, Duck Dodgers, mm-hmm. couldn't stand the newer cartoons, and I know everyone else loved it. And I had other family members who liked watching it because, you know, Tom Jones would do the narration and voice and opening song. And for me, it was just like, yeah, no, just past its prime at that point for me. It's not funny. But this one, I think, just bridged the gap, just still keeping it pretty, mm-hmm. you know, they already are doing the stuff for the minor audience and, you know, Animaniacs audience and Tiny Toons, but then to have them even go a step further and just say, hey, we're gonna talk about the other family that's most popular, is like, you know, it's just had that kind of just universal appeal. You recognize him instantly, you know. Tweety's funny, he's like Bugs in a way, and you know, Sylvester's just you just want to mm-hmm. see it's just so fascinating seeing someone who thinks he's that good, and you want to see if he'll actually catch the bird. So it's just awesome. And sometimes it's not even about eating. Sometimes it's just about them scolding each other. It's like, I need you to come back to Granny.
Yeah.
You left your cage. I was told to guard you, which why would you let a cat guard a bird? That's stupid, but it works for a cartoon. Hey,
Granny,
so.
By this point, Granny was up there a little senile.
And it's kind of funny. I think in a way they kind of play her up like Angela Lansbury on Murder, She mm-hmm. Wrote. She's like the head private eye. And
did you ever hear the theory that Angela Lansbury's character on Murder, She Wrote was actually the real murderer of everybody?
I know, but that I would buy it. I like that story.
I gotta look it up and I'll send it to you. But I had heard that somebody. So it's funny. Like nowadays, everyone has a fan theory. They're like, "This is what it means." It's like, no. Why don't you ask the person that wrote it what it means? Some of them are actually pretty good. Like that one, I was like.
That's one of those where you would actually like to see believe it to be true, because you know no one died as a result. It's just kind of playful and fun, you know, adventuresome. Yeah. Like Magnum PI, which it crossed over with, you know, it's just one of those.
I love that show.
Oh yeah, where we.
Oh, I still want to be. I still want to be Tom Selleck. If I still want to be Magnum PI, I wouldn't even wear those shorts. I don't know how good they looked on me since I have the potato, the body shape of a potato with toothpicks.
I think everyone would because he's a cool guy. But
just racing around Hawaii in a Ferrari with a Hawaiian shirt on.
I'd like to even meet the whole crew because that was a whole family.
Who was the guy with the helicopter? TJ?
Yeah.
TJ you gotta hang out with TJ.
Yeah, TJ and Hank and just all the other guys. Yeah, they'd be awesome. And so I think that's also why I like this. This was always an adventure. There was no set storyline. There was nothing that you had to keep track of. I do recall them going to various parts of like Bulgaria or Russia or whatever, mm-hmm. and then Hawaii type places. And it was the change of scenery. That's why it worked. And it really just, it was just the last time that because they did another cartoon that's the third to last year in 2000 called Tweety's High Flying Adventure. And despite liking the trailers, I didn't really.
Yeah, it didn't really take off either.
I didn't care for that movie. And yeah, it didn't do as well as some of the other recent movies around that time. You know, more people were keen on renting the classics. And this one, you know, there's got to be a fan base for it out there. I haven't looked at any forums, but I'm sure people were videotaping this.
We know what you're doing after this.
Yeah, there you go. And that's the thing. On occasions, I would see it air later in the day and I'd be confused. I'm like, oh, are they...
You know, and then you said it completely clicked, and I'm like, I know what show this is.
Exactly. It had that universal appeal. The formula was still there. The effort was still there. It looked, if you weren't so adept, you would suspect it was still done maybe in parts of the 60s or 70s, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, like some of the specials at least. And it just the formula is still there. Clearly these guys, you know, were breathing the same air. And so it displayed on screen. It never got boring. Even if you'd seen the same episode before, you might have just seen the last part and said you'd watch it again. Just was never repetitive. General likability, just general interest, just the diversity was the star. And just to wrap it up, so I don't max out all our minutes on the Zoom call, but I really it would just be funny because, you know, Cartoon Network used to just always, just throughout early 90s and 2000s, just start off the day, you know, from 5 or 6 in the morning, you're going to see endless cartoons, and then by, you know, maybe 10, maybe afternoon even, you know, they're going to stop and show something else, you know,
yeah.
Like Tom and Jerry, or maybe even just the yep. cartoon theater, and so they can show one of the Land Before Time movies. So for this, yeah. It was interesting just because, yeah, I would see that later in the afternoons, especially on a day where I was sick at home, just, you know, drinking soda and just staying, just watching whatever crap was on, you know, and
yep.
And they would have these on in the afternoon, sometimes later afternoon when you get home from school after 3 or 4. And it was interesting, you know, just because I would think, oh, wait, you know, for a minute each time it never felt. I'm like, wait a minute, are they showing, you know, the classics? And it's like, no, they're not showing the classics, but it's just as good as the classics. It's just
pretty close, yeah.
It's as close as they're ever going to get. So number one,
is this going to cause an argument, I wonder?
No.
I'm going Space Jam.
I'm going to go with Space Jam too, and see. I know other people who are going to fight me on that too.
Well, first off, it's the only one at the theater that made money, because Back in Action had a budget of $80 million and worldwide made $68 million.
Absolutely. Okay. So
Space Jam had a budget of $80 million, made $230 million. It's ranked 812th all time domestically.
Well,
after all these years, that's pretty solid.
I'll go even further. It's
just good.
It's good. A lot of people bash it now because they're not fond of the old school rap music or Michael Jordan. You know what? Screw that. You know, I don't even recognize
Michael Jordan changed the game, man. I mean,
I thought it was cool. I even saw parts of it, I think, occasionally on VH1. You know, that
Danny DeVito was in it. Come on.
Exactly. Ivan Reitman was originally attached to it, and then he left because, you know, creative differences, but his impact, I think that's the general likability. It had that Ghostbusters feel, and I mean, Bill Murray's in it, and so that makes it, in general, I connect with this way more than Roger Rabbit. Nothing against Roger Rabbit, it's just
I like the noir style of it, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Exactly. The noir and the adventure and just all the other cameos make the movie for me rather than the actual main story.
I just like
the whole, they're playing basketball, but they're not really playing basketball. They're, you know, setting up traps.
It's like watching the Harlem Globetrotters. Right? Like the Harlem Globetrotters playing the Washington, whatever they were, the Generals or whatever. The Globetrotters, always like watching the Scooby-Doo episode with the Globetrotters where he's on the forklift and dunks. My thing is, like, I grew up in the 90s. Not grew up, but I was a teenager I was born in, I was probably 20. In 2020, no, that can't be right. I was 23. So throughout the late 80s and early 90s, I always get in this discussion with people, and I'm like, look, that was like the golden age of basketball because the game was changing constantly. New players with new techniques. Michael Jordan came out. Every team had like two or three superstars. Yeah. Not like now where like one team's got nine superstars. And, you know, I mean, this movie had Michael Jordan. It had Bill Murray.
Shaq's got to be in it, right?
It had Charles Barkley, Sean Bradley, Patrick Ewing, Larry Johnson, Muggsy Bogues.
Muggsy Bogues,
who was like literally like one of the smallest dudes in basketball and could dunk.
Aren't there some ESPN guys who make cameos?
Yeah, Tom Berry's in it. Then there was even the voice cast was – oh, then there were other players. Danny Ainge, Steve Kerr, Alonzo Mourning, Horace Grant, AC. This is like a who's who.
Yeah, yeah.
They're players. Charles Oakley, Luke Longley, Derek Harper, Vlade Divac. I mean, Jeff Malone. The list just keeps going. And then those were all cameos.
Absolutely. And –
but yeah, Ahmad Rashad and Jim Rome were the announcers. Dan Castellaneta and Patricia Heaton were in it. I mean,
Did Fred Tata? Oh yeah, so you just said Fred Tata score. Yeah, what wasn't he in there?
Fred who?
Right, Fred Tata score. He's another voice actor who's pretty well known in the voice
cast. Let's see, Billy West as Bugs Bunny,
and you know,
a Futurama fame.
Exactly.
D. Bradley Baker, Danny DeVito.
Yeah, Disney, Bill Star Farmer. Wars,
yeah.
Voice veteran Bradley's in there. But, I mean, this definitely made me accept Billy West. Is like, you know what? I'm cool with him. Billy.
The guy you mentioned, I don't see listed. Frank Welker, wasn't it?
Okay, so I might have heard his voice. But, yeah, there's
lots of classic, you know.
I definitely made their career because you're widely seen, so you have more time to catch up on all their different voices. But I just dug just compared to any other movie or show where it combined – a version of the real world with an animated world, it did it pretty solidly because it just wasn't,
I mean,
it wasn't heavy handed. It was, yeah. And I know a lot of people complain about that because they just want to see that. You know, I, if I had to watch it now today, I would still be fine with animation. It tells,
I would love
story.
Watching that again. Yeah.
It's the right mixture.
And it is Ivan Reitman, FYI, who was one of the producers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like he was attached and then just left the director's chair. But, you know, because it wasn't.
Yeah, it was directed by Joe Pitka, so that's true.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah.
I watched this a lot with other family and other stuff, and it took me actual multiple viewings to actually watch the end credits scene because I thought it ended there. But yeah, once you get past the silly R. Kelly stuff, it shows up at the end and it's actually worth the wait. And unlike other stuff, you know,
well, Fly Like an Eagle was made famous again.
Absolutely. There's that.
And it was a pretty damn good version of it too.
Pretty much. And it kind of has a Running Man, Mortal Kombat kind of feel to it, for lack of a better description. Obviously.
Mixed with the Harlem Globetrotters.
Exactly. It just that whole, this is the ultimate show. No one's going to die, but it is just.
Rotten Tomatoes only gives it a 43% approval. Again, I don't agree with people that think they're critics.
Well, what's the audience score? It's got to be higher.
It doesn't say. I'm on Wikipedia.
You're
grading a 5 out of 10. Come on. Space Jam was fun to watch. Of course, when Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel both give a movie thumbs up, that's impressive. Ebert gave the film 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
It's a marriage of good ideas.
Three
films for the price of one, giving us a comic treatment of the career adventures of Michael Jordan crossed with a Looney Tunes cartoon and some showbiz warfare.
Yeah, I know not every – yes, it's a commercial. Yes, it's a special, basically.
Well, it was based off commercials. It was based off Nike commercials.
And
because Bugs and Michael did the commercials together.
Exactly, yeah. So it's by the director of Bad. 25.
And I have no problem with them doing a sequel with LeBron James because – if it wasn't for Michael Jordan, like who I still think is it's hard to say who's the greatest, right? Because the game changes. In his prime, would he still be able to take on these newer guys in their prime who learn by watching him and know what he does?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But for sure, at that point in time, as a Chicago Bulls fan and a Chicago guy, he was the greatest of all time. And I think he'd still be far above average if he played in the NBA in his prime right now. So I don't have a problem with, I don't have a problem with a sequel being made with, you know, LeBron James. He's the guy.
They waited too late,
And with Kobe Bryant dead. See, to me, Kobe Bryant was always like the second coming of Jordan. He changed his game the same way. When he got to a certain age, he couldn't drive the lane. He perfected his fadeaway jump shot the way Michael did, you know? So fair enough. Loved watching Kobe. And then when Kobe died earlier this year or last year, I was just, it you know, it's funny for somebody I never met that I was kind of like, wow, that I was really bummed by that.
Pretty much. I mean.
So I don't mind them remaking it with LeBron. I think it's cool. Let's see what some of these new guys do that are going to be in it, you know? But this one was basically the dream team. This was basically the dream team from the Olympics.
Yeah, it's by Ryan Coogler, who I'm hit and miss on. I like Creed. Fruitvale Station's a classic. Black Panther, not so hot on. But so this is gonna, either way, this is going to be a mercenary job for him. But I'm sure it'll be. I think I saw. What's her name from Us and. Oh, you know the.
You know the technical achievements of the first one at the time too. I mean, it used digital.
Yeah, you're seeing shadows and layers over everybody.
Digital 2D animation, background layers. It was done on paper. It was scanned.
Yeah.
It was using Cambridge animation systems. I mean,
it really is well polished. And even though you know, it's added
in. It still looks good, too, to this day.
Absolutely. And so Metacritic, who I often go more because they actually read the fucking reviews, gives it a 59. Audience score for that is a 6.9 out of 10. But.
That I would go with. It's not an Oscar-winning masterpiece, although I don't care for most of those. But it's a solid, fun movie. It's easily a 6 or 7 out of 10.
It might be at least...
For me, it's maybe more of an 8, but...
You know what? A controversial opinion. I would give it an Oscar for the best animated picture that year. What else was out?
I don't think that's controversial at all, virtual.
But what else?
I think I would go with that.
Name an animated movie that came out in 96 that was better than Space. So,
well, one best song for I Believe I Can Fly.
Oh, okay. You know,
it won a Grammy for that. It won
for me. It was
best individual achievement, technical achievement for the Annie Awards, best animated feature, best. I mean, it won a few awards.
For me, it would be the opening. You know, it's time to jam, and then even just the workout scene because I heard that one constantly on Radio Disney. But this one,
you know, there were supposed to be two or three sequels
compared to most, which
disappointed they didn't make.
Exactly, but I mean, compared to most. There is an actual story underneath it, and
yeah, there is.
It's cool seeing. For me, they pretty much put him as a superhero. I mean, this wasn't Meteor Man bad. It wasn't even cheesy like.
No, it was far better than it was far better than that.
Yeah, totally, and
which is really odd.
And I started picking up on it. I started noticing how Yosemite and Fudd are dressed like Vincent and Jules from Pulp Fiction in one moment. I never saw that the first few times because I mean, how could I? You know, I'm 6 when this came out, so. Watched endless amounts. I forget who bought the videotape for me, but I was surprised I didn't wear it out. I watched it a shit ton.
I still have the video. I have a Blockbuster. I have the Blockbuster previously viewed videotape of it.
So there you go. It's.
I miss Blockbuster because I used to go there once a month and I'd look at all the movies that were coming out, new ones, and I'd probably buy 2 or 3 and I'd go home and watch movies. It doesn't seem as much. Like now there's so many to choose from on Netflix. By the time I pick one, it's time to go to bed.
Absolutely, and I mean...
There's a giant plus to digital distribution, but a giant negative.
Absolutely. It's just one of those, you know you're going
to... Oh, Jordan wouldn't star in the sequel. That's why they canceled it.
You know, and I can respect that. At the time, there didn't seem like a need, and now I'm...
Well, they also they also had the idea for one called Spy Jam that was going to have Jackie Chan, but that became the basis for that became the basis for Looney Tunes Back in Action.
I would have seen that, even though
I would have still watched that.
Fuck,
oh yeah, though... there was going to be Race Jam with Jeff Gordon. I would have watched that.
You know,
and Skate Jam with Tony Hawk seems like it would have been a fantastic idea. I don't know how that one didn't happen.
I'm surprised they didn't contract Lance Armstrong. And see, they did a pretty good.
But how did Skate Jam with Tony Hawk and Looney Tunes not happen? Like, what better athletes to fit into the cartoon?
You know. When Tony Hawk appears in goofy stuff like Airheads and Triple X, you would have thought he must have just been
a slam dunk.
Exactly, pun intended. And you would have thought they would have been milking the shit out of him. But no, all I was
forgot he was in Triple X, but it's not like he had a starring role.
You're right. It's like he must have. I don't think he was hard to get along with. I think he was just hard to market and just understand the business side of things. Let alone,
I don't think he was an actor. I don't think you could act as the big problem.
There was that, and then I think it was just how to set. I think everyone was looking at other trends, like, well, it didn't work with Carrot Top, so it can't work with him possibly. But I mean, seeing him be interviewed on all these Nickelodeon shows, I knew he was a cool guy. So it's like, I don't know what.
Yeah, but you could have did Skate Jam, and you could have had the other skaters with him. Like, I mean, even the lesser skaters like Bam Margera would have been perfect teamed up with like Taz.
Pretty much. And I mean, you would think there would be Bob Burnquist
would have been awesome to see in there with like the road teamed up with like the Roadrunner or something, God. You know.
Aren't you glad we didn't have to see Shaun White? That's who that would be nowadays, the snowboarding douche, you know, who's talented but not very nice people. So yeah, this avoided all, you would think this would be more power hungry. And I would have thought, isn't Shaq in this? Shaq's not in this. He was in Kazan.
He was in Blue Chips and then he was in Kazam. Wow. A movie that everyone mixes him up with Sinbad in for some reason.
And for some reason, I always got a sense that he made a brief cameo or voiced one of the monsters, but I was mistaken. But
I don't think his popularity.
Yeah,
you know what it is? 1996, I don't even know if he was in the NBA yet.
So there you go. He's already in Kazam and doing a rap career that same
year. That would have been after this, right?
So there you go. Yeah, he's too busy doing that stupid genie movie. And this one, this just had a multi-appeal to me. So the older I got, I still watched it. I know I had cousins from San Francisco.
I guess he was playing at that point. 92 to 2. He came in 92. But I don't know when he became...
I don't know when he became a thing where it was like, you gotta be the next Shaq.
Yeah. But I mean, I do know he was in the movie Blue Chips, and I know he was in, like,
so 2 years Kazan. Prior. So there you go. He's distracted doing his own thing. He probably it's probably a good thing if I think about it. It just wouldn't have meshed well with Jordan and all the other guys. So,
yeah, his personality back then wasn't the fun, like true. Now you see him, you're like, this guy's hilarious. Why wasn't he like this 20 years ago?
He took so long getting good at what he was doing before he was like, I'm going to show you a side of me. And it's like Jordan was always showing both sides and doing good at both. So everyone's like, he's a superstar. He's a superhero. And that's what I like about this movie. This makes him a superhero. It's like, he's a real guy meeting fictional people. But it's a very dreamy movie. It's very widely shot. I'm surprised Jerry Bruckheimer, Joel Silver isn't one of the credit producers. It's that kind of movie. And I instantly accept Billy West as the voice of Bugs. He is just as dear to me as Mel Blanc and all the other guys, because he's not only been doing voice acting for years or what feels like centuries, he just had that same level of multi-talent and vulnerability. And I mean, this introduces us to Lola, who, you know, we instantly accepted as part of that same universe, you know. And I think Roger Rabbit didn't just have as big an appeal on me because the cartoons weren't shown widely, you know, by the 90s and 2000s, so
Roger Rabbit had a lot of cameos, but it really ultimately just focused on him, Jessica, the judge, and then the main detective.
And it was in the 80s, and so they were always just kind of playing a gamble with what was too much and finding out the hard way, oh, this is perfect for adults, but too much for kids. And this one, this had everything for every demographic.
This hit right in the middle.
Yeah. I'm sure there's got to be some of jokes for adults that don't sit well. And I mean, you know, and, you know, to have a minority as the star of the show was also really groundbreaking here. You know, it just back then in the 90s, everyone thought, oh, it's a movie aimed at for, you know, black people versus white people. I was like, no, it's a movie for everybody. You know, it doesn't.
Are you thinking of Sonequa Martin Green for the second one?
Oh, no, it was Lupita is who I was thinking of. But yeah, the Star Trek Discovery gal is connected to it. So, yeah, it was one of those. I showed my cousins this multiple times. I don't think they saw much of the original cartoons, but they saw this, loved it. It just had that perfect escapism. There's different types of gags, different types of jokes. Yes, I get that this won't appeal to people who don't care for the certain soundtrack. That's their problem. Those who complain about the plot, I think you guys are just nitpicking. This is just escapism. In terms of animation, we're just not going to agree. I think the animation is wonderful still.
No, you and I all agree.
Yeah. No, I know you agree, but I've been seeing some other people. I'm seeing some other people complain about it, and I'm like, no, get the hell out of here. They got shadowing, layering, green screen.
The Monstars make a cameo in the Pinky and Brain episode Star Warners.
So there you go. And I think there were, if I wasn't mistaken, you know, I wouldn't know, but I think they did promote it with all the other WB shows like Animaniacs and Pink in the Brain. They would have them do mock interviews or something. Maybe even,
yeah, they did.
And they, this is definitely by the time when everything had to have a Happy Meal or embrace commercialism. So I'm sure there was McDonald's collectibles you can find on eBay for...
God, I missed those 2 decades.
Right? Back when it was just more...
Everything was just fun.
Well, it was fun, and you accepted the commercial side of it instead of... You see it now, and it's just too much. Everything flops, and it's all a failure or go home.
Even
or
if it makes money.
And if you
if it doesn't make enough money, it's not good
exactly.
enough.
Exactly. And if you don't like it, you're the unpopular kid. It's like, I hate that. Just because it makes money doesn't mean we like it. Doesn't mean we want to see more of it. So I liked how...
Now I want to watch Space Jam.
You should. Isn't it on Netflix again?
Probably. I don't have my VHS player hooked up, so I can't watch it.
That might be, because for a while I was seeing a lot of podcasters within these last 3 years bring it up at least once. So I get that if you're just nothing is ever good enough, you're not going to like this movie. But if you're like me and you preferred the old stuff and you didn't like a lot of the new stuff, this was the perfect compromise. This would, in fact, you know what? Introduce your kids to it. If you got to show them something and you don't want to go for all the select cartoons, show them this movie or show them Back in Action. I don't care. Show one of the two. Now, for whatever reason, I kind of thought Back in Action was just a little more fun escapism, but I never saw it as much because it was just so gag heavy. And this one
had more of an actual plot.
It had a plot and it spaced it out.
It had plots really too.
Yeah. And I mean, like you say, it took me years to realize, oh, that's Danny DeVito, role, but it...
Well, and it's funny because it's supposed to take place between when Jordan retired in 93 and came back in 95.
Yeah, it's another...
So it's like, oh, that's what he was doing instead of failing at baseball.
It's a break the fourth wall and then just have some other side stuff. And having the other sports people do some commentary is awesome. Bill Murray also just kind of... He just reminds you that it's okay to laugh because he's adding his own dry sense, even though he's playing it straight and being a serious role. And then, yeah, Patricia Heaton years before... Everyone Loves Raymond, yeah, is briefly in here. And so, yeah, it is cool just seeing and all the characters have something to do.
The cooperation from the NBA to let the players all do it and stuff was pretty awesome, too. I mean,
and it worked. And some people are saying this feels like a commercial. It might be a commercial.
It was a commercial for the NBA, but who cares?
It at least is an entertaining commercial in terms of. Yeah. Like every other music video guy who's just going to have, everyone tight shorts, posing for the camera, just too overdone. It's not overdone.
Space Jam was by the Quad City DJs. I forgot about that.
Right.
Sealed it Fly Like an Eagle, that I remember.
But yeah, the DJ guys, I've listened to that theme countless times. That almost always gets played at a lazy Friday night dance. And so yeah, Groovin soundtrack. We're gonna have to disagree, guys. Sorry, I like it. Animation.
I'm on you. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm just saying for the other ones because been getting bashed. But I mean, just the shadowed layers and like you say, just the connectability, the everyone doing all these other side jokes and having something for the sports guys. I think that's what unites it. It's not just a sports movie. It's not just a cartoon. It's not just a live action meets It's not just a family movie. It's not even just a movie for everybody. It's as Disney as Warner was ever going to get. And it's unfortunate.
At the time, it out-Disney Disney. Because let's be fair, other than a few big hits from like 80 to 2000, Disney was kind of floundering, especially in the TV world.
Yeah, they had embraced home video. And don't get me wrong, there was some cool... They were doing good in the cartoons Saturday morning.
They did a lot of good. What were the Saturday or Sunday evening movies they used to do? They did good there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like they had like the Brat Pack or the Rat Pack or something about a bunch of army brat kids. They had all these different movies, and those were solid. But they were made for TV movies. That was like going back to their roots when like Sandy Duncan was in all their movies.
Sandy Duncan, but even just earlier. Sandy
Duncan.
Early Disney Channel was even good because there was.
Yeah.
You take it away, it was made dirt cheap in Canada, so they had time to play around with the plots and actually justify the end time. And they were fun, but then by like 2004, I was like, yeah, okay, fuck this.
They started fading.
Every parent is an idiot. Every kid is whiny, whiny, and I have to
follow. And a genius.
Right. And,
movie-wise, biggest successes from like 95 to 2010 were Pixar.
Right.
Animation stepped up and started kicking Pixar's ass. And they had to because DreamWorks started coming out of nowhere. Suddenly DreamWorks is making movies and shows as good as Disney the last 20 years.
Right.
But at the time, this was Warner Brothers' time to shine, and they did it with this movie.
I could not have said it better. So, yeah, as a worthy adversary to Pixar and Disney's Toy Story, this
was more fun. The mustard. And I love Toy Story. I still have my original Laserdisc. I have my original Woody doll.
I watched Toy Story countless times, but I never watched it as fucking much as
Space Jam. It was never as enjoyable because, like, this didn't have that tension where, like, someone's going to die.
There's that, and
the whole movie is just fun.
It's very well scored. When you take away all the other stuff, you know, it just, it would mix that in with the, you know, just the overdramatic trumpets in a way without being too gritty or just too cliche. It's still good today. It's just, I would show this to any audience member. They're going to love it. I show this to any, it's pretty ageless for me. It's just, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry you can't enjoy it. This is just too much fun.
It was watching NBA Jam on the big screen. With Looney Tunes thrown in.
And, you know, it really was a fun. It didn't get as much airplay for whatever reason. But, yeah, it had to at least be the Fox or UPN movie of the night. But it definitely came on VH1 on rare and once in a blue moon. And I don't think they, besides the NBA sponsoring it, I don't think they ever had as many copyright issues as, you know, like Roger Rabbit did, which, because, you know, multiple cartoons all in the same.
Oh, multiple, yeah, they spanned generations.
To where it's still not on Disney Plus because Warner's like, if you do it, so we need it too.
I don't understand why the two can't play nice and just be like, fine, we both do it.
Money, money, money. They're all desperate.
By the OJs?
No, let's see, this is around the same time where everybody is starting to embrace all the serious shows and the reality TV and, you know, court TV for that matter. And this one, even if it had been straight to video, it would have been awesome. It's just,
yeah, to be fair, I mean, 95 and 96 were both relatively good years for Warner Brothers because I know a lot of, this is controversial too, but Batman Forever came out the year before, and I liked Batman Forever. It was a fun movie, especially after watching Tim Burton's second offering, which Batman Returns I thought was
It's definitely
Batman Forever I thought was fun. And then all of a sudden Space Jam comes out the next year and you're like, you know, they're doing all right here.
Yeah, this is a big year for Warner. You got A Time to Kill, you got another Schumacher cool movie. And it's just your mind, you were from the ground up invited to chase it. And I mean, the musical montage, you know, just showing Jordan's career. It's kind of a biographical movie in a way. It's like, you know, I'm cool. Yeah. You accept him instantly. That is the way to go, because every other movie, when they get a persona, they just want them to carry the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, at this time we're seeing, you know, every way.
The movie was as much about him as it was about Bugs Bunny wanting to beat the aliens.
Exactly. And if it had someone like Jim Carrey or one of the Wayans, it just wouldn't have played as well. I mean, you saw how Blank Man turned out. That wasn't great. But it just was one of those, is just, oh, well, look at Still. That's so bad, it's good. But it's, this one is just,
you can take it.
and this one is just, you know, it sets it all up so you can accept, okay, Jordan's a badass basketball player. He's used to playing by NBA rules.
And at that point, the internet wasn't around at that point, so no one knew he was cheating on his wife with like 15 different women.
And it's so weird, doesn't it? It happens in the middle.
I went to college with, I was in architecture school, and the local junior college, and two of the people there were managers at his restaurant downtown, and they're like, oh yeah, he's in there like every other night with a different woman, and none of them have ever been his wife.
Yeah, trophy girlfriends, I guess, for lack of a better word.
But I guess that was, supposedly that was like their behind the scenes agreement, was like, hey, let me have my career, I'll make all the money, and then when we split, I'll give you money for you and the kids and everything and whatever. And so from what I've heard in the background, I don't know if that's true, but yeah, the guy did all right for himself.
He
got screwed by his contract, but he made so much money off Nike that it didn't matter.
yeah, some people say he's a hothead, but see, he's the kind of guy, I'm cool with him being a hothead. He's earned it because he's...
If he wasn't a hothead, he wouldn't have got to where he was.
There's that, and he's just too cool for school. Yeah, just everybody growing up, even if you weren't watching sports, and I was never...
That is a phrase that is so not your generation, not even my generation. I'm surprised you said it.
I know. It's not my generation, but it is one of those where it's like...
I'm older, and it's not mine. Oh, man. No, but we both agree on number one, and that's awesome. Yeah, and like you said, if you haven't seen it, you got to see it.
Absolutely. And it's not a bad way to introduce people to it, but, I mean, you got to give this more credit. I barely saw the trailer, and it was just one of those – it wasn't one of the – but from what I do recall, it was one of those – it wasn't – they give all the jokes away and that's it. You know, it wasn't even too dated even. It was just the right kind of just, we got to challenge Disney and we got to catch your attention and make you want to rent it or see it.
They were even so much challenging Disney as in, hey, we have a great idea. Let's just make this.
I mean, it's a rivalry that's just kind of unwritten.
Dude, the guy that directed it, Joe Pitka, he directed the music video for Free as a Bird, which I believe was...
Yeah, Michael Jackson.
No, it was the Beatles song.
Oh, freeze. Oh, shit. Okay, so yeah.
Wait. Which depicts from, yeah. And then he deleted, then he only directed two movies, man.
But he did that documentary on Bad 25, yeah, Michael Jackson.
Yeah, he did Let It Ride and Space Jam.
So he has a music video background, and I think this is the best way to do it, because it did need to be this flashy. It's not doing prompt, shaky camera or anything. It's just doing the more just... It's framed just like the animations.
He was able to take his short film experiences and make it work in the movie, because that's what the movie needed, right? Like, it wasn't...
It needed
like,
to be witty. It needed to be energetic. But yeah. It also, you know, you look at this, that's why I resonate. The you know, cut to shots, they're all very calculated. They are all planned out. They aren't just... We got the best in the editing room, because, I mean, it was all going to be ad later in post. So everybody's firing on all cylinders, saying both need to be acceptable. You know, the endorsement, it's got to be there, but it can't be the star of the show. I mean, it's Michael Jordan. That's already endorsement alone.
He directed over 80 Super Bowl commercials. Wow.
So there you go. He knew how to make the studios happy and the audience happy. He's got to get their attention. And what gets your attention when...
Why they picked him. He directed Hair Jordan, which became Space Jam. Hair Jordan was a Nike commercial with Bugs and Michael.
Oh, so there you go.
So they're like, well, he directed that. Let's just leave him do it.
You know, sometimes corporations do make good decisions, guys. You know, and because there's plenty of commercials that wouldn't be bad movies. It's just they always pick the bad ones where it's like, yeah, no, I already can't stand it for 20 seconds. Don't do it. But this one... To avoid sounding redundant, I do think this is a good... You should teach this in a film class. I don't give a shit. Just show it to everybody and just say, did this resonate with you, or is it just a very fun popcorn movie? Because regardless, it is really... It's not trying. It really did hit a lot of... It did a lot of slam dunks.
It was the perfect time, though. It was the perfect time. It was the perfect decade. It was the perfect storm of everything for this movie.
And so ironic how Jordan plays, you know, golf, because I do recall, doesn't he get sucked into a golf?
He gets sucked through a portal, yeah. Well, man, it was good talking to you and discussing this one. We can keep going on and on, but I think we've pretty much set our say here.
The rankings. Once again, we did Fantastic Island, Tiny Toons, Animaniacs, and we just kind of combined Pinky and the Brain in there because, I mean, how can we not? It just is part of the show, and it's just unfair to have to choose one or the other. And then we did a new Looney Tunes show, and then we did Quackbusters Back in Action, and then Wacko's Wish, and then Roadrunner and Sylvester and Tweety, and then Space Jam. And I'm surprised they've let us go over 4 minutes. So I'll go with honorable mentions. I'm going to go with Gremlins 2. And just that there's a hysterical opening at the beginning featuring some of the characters. And that's, if anything, that's a foreshadow of how they, of course, they were going to pick Dante because he was a big Looney Tunes fan to do Back in Action. So it was like, but That one is wild because it apparently varies on the VHS, and the DVD is like the theatrical cut, and even the TV version is like uses part of the VHS one, which is weird because when I saw it on Starz back in the day, I think it had the theatrical cut, and it had even alternate ones like using stock footage of John Wayne and other fucking shit. This is crazy, but I liked it because, I mean, it's weird. I don't watch wrestling, but I watch movies with wrestlers, so I don't know where I stand in that, but it was cool seeing Hulk Hogan just tear off his shirt and say, because it's the same kind of thing. And I think Gremlins and all this other playful stuff, Spielberg has nothing to do with this, but I do think Warner Bros. Was embracing a lot of the Amblin other stuff. It's like, it's a formula that works. Leave those people alone. Mm-hmm. Get someone. And so, yes, I get that commercial directors might not be deep as, you know, all these other people. Obviously, they're not Werner Herzog, but that's okay. We didn't come to see an awesome Werner Herzog movie, although Werner Herzog is definitely more accessible than some of these other artsy-fartsy guys, and arguably. And this guy, all these guys, you know, the script,
They're much more Uwe Boll.
If this was Uwe Boll, he'd be having puppets. So I think this works also because it's very diverse with the gags. Like, there's references, and then Lola Bunny's a welcome addition to it, but it's not like Jessica Rabbit, where you're like, it's a little too sexualized for kids. I'm not sure I want to show this to them, but
right.
Yeah, I'm kind of uncomfortable because I don't watch cartoons to be.
Andy, why she talk like that?
Right. Yeah. I, if anyone does, I'm sorry. I do not think that way. I think it's just gross, but yeah, whatever floats your boat. For me, it's just, I go to movies to have fun and emotion, and cartoons. In this day and age, you're better off making an anti-cartoon like South Park than you are just making just some other just random distortion. But too many of them are also, unfortunately, trying to just be gross and just stupid. And this one, it had enough of the appeal. I'm sure there was probably 10 different rewrites of the script. There had to be. It's a major motion picture. But I think enough of the ducks, pun intended, because, you know, there's ducks in this movie. But I think enough of it was in the row. And I'll give you this. It's actually kind of cool seeing Daffy not be the hothead. He is following Bugs' lead. There's no love triangle. There's no other interruptions. Like, once Jordan leaves his real world, there's not much revisitation of that. There is no, hey, you know, search for missing persons.
Not until the end when the coaches are there and ESPN's there and all that.
Yeah, it's not intrusive. It's by introducing all the evil... The evil bad guys don't overshadow the movie, and that's good because we came to see the guys we grew up knowing, and they're not stupid. They don't hog the scenery. They didn't try and, don't get me wrong, it would have been funny as hell if they had someone like William Dafoe or Dennis Hopper doing the voices, but no, they didn't have that. They didn't have any stock voice actors. They just keep it very layered, and even when they're mutant and all muscular, they're not animated poorly to where, and the CGI mixing with the, you know, 2D animation it works also in that it doesn't look, the money shows on screen and in the best possible way without saying, you know, and there's just no wasted shots. Cause I mean, they're working with all the cartoonists, and I'm sure that had to be in the budget restrictions, you know, don't throw random shit in there. We do not want to rewrite this. We want to make it just perfect. We are not going to, and it's just a rarity. And clearly someone was speaking the same language. I'm sure there were many people who were protective at the studios, like, hey, you know, we're related to some of the people here. You better make a good movie. And it just shows on screen for me. And I mean, virtually every cartoon from that WB staple has notable scenes. And even when they're not doing anything, I mean, fucking Roadrunner and Pepe Le Pew are in this just as much, even though they're not in every frame.
Right.
Bugs is the first guy on the movie, even though he's kind of the leader like he always was, he doesn't try and steal a movie from that. And that is remarkable, because usually that used to always be the thing. The comedian had to steal the spotlight from the straight guy. And it's like, this is the right kind of balance, just like 48 Hours, for lack of a better comparison. You know, and Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy, it's both their movie as opposed to, you know, one or the other. You know?
And Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, Sam Jackson is just as relevant. Hell, even Jeremy Irons is just as relevant as.
That's true. All three of them. That's a good point.
Right, and all the gags are perfectly timed. Kind of, it's like a checker or chess game where it's always a gotcha bitch, you know, moment. It's like, and it's a perfectly timed gag, so you don't ever feel like, you know. And they follow you enough on the court. Mm-hmm. So you can tell the animators and everybody were perfectly timing, you know, how do we make the court bigger than it is without making it stale? And, you know, we got to have this kind of wide shot, you know, to establish it all. And the crowd isn't intrusive. Usually that always has to be a thing. We have to have all the stupid cliche people yelling. Mm-hmm.
Spike Lee.
Oh, hey. I like Spike Lee and all of her stuff.
I'm just saying, he's always at the Lakers game. Was it the Lakers or the Knicks?
Oh, I gotcha.
He was always at the game, right, standing up yelling. Like, who are you? Sit down.
Okay, gotcha. He was at the Lakers. So, yeah, we don't really see much of the crowd because they're not the star. And we are the audience, you know. And so this isn't as over the top. It'll appeal to a Karate Kid or
Black. Oh, sorry, it's the Knicks, not the Lakers. He's always at.
There you go. This is a spectacle, and it's a damn not since that one special, The Amazing Race, where Bugs and Speedy are, or is it the Roadrunner and Godzilla are in a racing match, which was a televised special, have we seen something that's worth watching? And it's worth seeing on the big screen. I think there was an anniversary special back in 2016, because yeah, that would make sense, 20-year anniversary. But this one, you know, I think it's got the Blu-ray treatment, and I know I've been talking about it too much because surprisingly Zoom hasn't kicked us off yet, but all these I think resonate, guys, because they understand the characters and they understand even when their shortcomings, you know, because there was Arabian Nights and there was 1001 Rabbit Tales, didn't cut the mustard for me at all. And it just, it just very long sit, even when there was barely any commercials, animation for the main things were just not inspired, and just that's the reason they stuck out like a sore thumb. And you can make it out, it's clearly not the same because it's just not as fresh and it's not well done compared to the, and they just picked lesser shorts, not saying the shorts were bad, but they just picked ones that just weren't cinematically as enjoyable. And this one, like you say, I mean, it embraces the whole catalog. It's like, it reminds you, it's like the after credit scene, for instance. I mean, it's worth sitting through. And I can't say that about every Marvel movie or DC movie. There's moments where it's like, yeah, you didn't need to see that. You weren't missing anything. This is a good standalone movie. Or of course they had a after credit scene, 'cause it's going to cut into the next thing for the next movie. But this one, I mean, fucking Daffy, Tweety, Bugs, and, it's probably got on Wikipedia. Who appears in the final ending?
Oh, yeah. It didn't say. I don't think.
Let me see. So, I mean, the writers were... okay, so Steve Ludnick, who did, you know, Santa Claus. So there you go. And a lot of stuff for Tom Arnold. You got Timothy Harris, who did a bunch of other animated stuff and wrote for Trading Places and Twins. So there you go. And Kindergarten Cop. So there you go. A lot of Ivan Reitman's go-to guys. And then
Space Jam's after credit scene was Bugs says, "That's all, folks." Porky arrives and says, "That's my line." Daffy then interprets and says, and attempts to say the catchphrase. However, he's pushed out of the screen by the aliens, who then say the catchphrase. Michael Jordan pushes the screen up and asks, "Can I go home now?"
Yes, that's it. All right. So, wow. And so I think that's what works. It's just, I mean, all the other supporting actors, even though they don't have much, holy fuck, I forgot. Tom Berry, you know, from West Wing and Fast and Furious and The Practice is here as Jordan's father. And then you got Teresa Randall from Bad Boys and
that's huge, and I
always forget she was in it, but I would always remember that Newman from Seinfeld, Wayne Knight, was in
He's in there too, yeah,
and that was kind of my introduction to him, so we always resonated. He was another friendly rival, and he, along with Bill Murray, just invited everybody. He's like, okay, it's cool just having those extra guys in there because they're not necessarily bad guys, but it's just cool having other, you know, independent people. So just they appear. Oh, that's right. Broadcaster Jim Rome appears. But
yeah, I said that one.
You did say that, but it's like a brief moment, isn't it? I don't recall him being in there much, so thank God.
Oh, true.
Oh, God. So you mentioned all the voice actors. Did any of them ever say that they got recognized for this? Like they put it on their voice reel?
You know, I don't know. I didn't really. I don't know.
Apparently, this apparently was promoted during like Quest for Camelot. And so that's interesting because I didn't really watch that much. I mostly watched, you know, caught parts of it on TV after the fact. But same kind of deal where Warner is embracing the animation and realizing, you know, we do have to provide an alternative. And Chris Rock is one of the voices on Basketball Jones. I didn't realize that because I know I've heard the soundtrack on a few different times. But yeah, James Newton Howard did the theme. And I think that's what resonates. He understands all the different tones and moods. And he's fortunately still with us. But, you know, and he's name a Warner Brothers movie, which he didn't score. You know, he scored so many of them. But he finds the right rhythm where it avoids being melodramatic. So you don't ever have just a cringeworthy moment. And even a moment where you're like, yeah, it was funnier when I was a kid. It's like, you know, it's still well played. You know, it's like seeing a stand-up act. And it's like ones that don't hit, you still well done. Well, nice try anyway. Yeah, I'm going to give you those points because considering how they had to do another just in a different world premise and put it with a bunch of other talents and make sure the animation was right. And I mean, it really, there. I can't think of any really just blisters that just stand out.
Not at all.
Unless if you hate this, it's probably because you just never cared for a lot of the stuff around that time, and I get it. There were some bad stuff during the 90s, but
I'm gonna start reeling you in a little bit.
That's fine. It's fine.
I do need to get going, but okay. It was great. Well, it was great talking about because it's a great movie, and those were all great picks that we had. So
yeah, and I'm gonna let you plug yourself on.
Oh yeah, you can find us all over the place for the Attack of the Movies. Or that's all, folks. The Attack of the B Movies podcast. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes. I think. Oh my God, I need to get better at this. Spotify, iHeartRadio. I think we're on a few things now.
Podbean,
and you can find us. Are we on Podbean? I'm not even sure anymore.
Yeah, you are. You still are.
Okay, Podbean. There we are. So yeah, if you like really bad movies and reviews by two people that don't really know what they're doing, give us a listen.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.